Hey, buddy, my name is Bobby. I'm an alcoholic. I want to congratulate all the men that got medallions tonight, not so much for the quantity of the days, but of the quality of the days that they've had. And I particularly want to thank my sponsor, Don, with his 42 years and a man who helped fashion the constitution of this meeting. I'm really grateful to him. I had no idea what AA was about. I went to AA for about 22 years before that. This is like 31 years ago. I went to AA, I forget when, and maybe I was about 25 or 6, some such age as that. And during that 22 years, I had about like 42 detoxes, still in AA. I didn't know what it was about. I thought it was about not drinking. I went on that way for years and years and years, thinking, just won't drink. And I made a tremendous mistake in thinking that if I stopped drinking, that was it. There was nothing else that was anybody wanted of me, but just stop drinking. So I didn't understand what this was about. I never understood I didn't read this book. I read other books and went to other stupid meetings and things like that. And everybody was pounding home the message, just don't drink, just don't drink, just don't drink. Well, I never liked that at all because I was always unhappy. Because I knew what my future was. If I didn't drink, I'd be miserable. So it's like saying, if you stop drinking, you're going to be miserable. So why don't you do that? I say, who the fuck would do that? I'd rather drink. So anyway, they mentioned here in this step that our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what were you like now. The most cogent phrase in there is what happened. When you come into AA, something is supposed to happen. And to give the most general word, I think, about that you have to change. See, not just not drink. So the reason I made a mistake was because, I'm just going to say how I got to this third step, of course, was step one and step two. It was like a kind of a logical sequence. It was they're all like tied together. Everything's predicated on this. And the key word here is how. How it works. Not when or why or stuff like philosophical questions or anything. It's how it works. This is what we do. If you want to do what we do, you might get our result. Or just do it your own way then. And if you're on the wrong path, why would you do that? So you could be wronger? By trying harder. So anyway, we knew of powers over alcohol that our lives have become unmanageable. So I used to read that sentence that I didn't see the dash in it. I put my own word in there, put in a conjunctive adverb, like therefore, so I could make a syllogism out of it. In other words, a thought pattern of it. So I said, well, with powers over alcohol, lives have become unmanageable. But it doesn't say that. It says we admitted we're powerless over alcohol. Now, anybody with a history like mine of drinking, that would be like a tautology, something too completely understood to be explained. You got trouble with booze. Okay? You don't have to go any further than that. And you have no self-awareness at all if you don't know that. So then I said, well, my life's unmanageable because I'm a drunk. I'm an alky. I've been so for a long, long, long time. So that was wrong, too, because the dash in this sentence means the construction that's to follow it must be looked at with considerable emphasis. So it's like, we have powers over alcohol. That's one thing. Two, our lives are unmanageable. It doesn't mean our lives are unmanageable because we drink. We drank because there's other matters that we never took care of, like spiritual matters, those kind of things, like maturity, like growing up, like changing, like becoming a man, those kind of things. So then now I said, Jesus Christ, if I'm fucked when I drink, and I'm fucked when I don't drink, I'm double fucked, right? Because that's how people used to talk in Hyannis years and years ago. They say, oh, you're an Elkin? You're fucked. That's great. It's like in the book, they put it more politely. There's one chapter that says, most chronic alcoholics are doomed. And then right at the next, in a miracle of pagination, on the very next page, right at the top, it says, but what is the solution? See, to go from being doomed to having a solution. So I saw that as the beginning of deliverance, because that's what I wanted, was not only to stop drinking, but to have a happy sobriety, to have some kind of serenity, to have some kind of decency, to not to be bothered by myself the way that I was, and not living the life that I was. So I didn't know the situation was a moral problem. And I didn't buy, I never bought the disease paradigm of alcoholism. And I don't buy that paradigm today because I think it's a huge cop-out. I can't go to my daughter's wedding because there might be booze there. Or I can't work because I got a disease. I can't I don't mind the word if it's hyphenated. If it says dis-ease, I'm at dis-ease. I have no serenity. I have no composure. I have nothing like that. So I don't mind doing that. So our lives become imagined. We came to believe power in ourselves that restore us to sanity. Thank God for the second step. In the old days, they used to say this. We came to the meeting. You know, we came. Then they'd say, we came to. It's like, oh, this is what this is about. It's not about drinking. It's about drinking, but it's not drinking. It's paradoxical. AA is not about drinking, but it's about drinking, but it's not about drinking. See, that's just to get into the game, to not drink. That's the ante. If you want to play the game, it's a big, big spiritual game. And if you want to play it the way we play it, you have to put up an ante to get to play the game. So the ante is try to not drink for one day, or drug for one day. That's the ante. And do it each day, so you have a chance to really clear up and not come out of like a detox full of Valium or Tylenol or Demerol or sodium amytal or Thorazine or some, anything ending in IUM, anything ending in AL, and anything ending in Zine. So what they're saying here now is we came to believe. So we believe, all right, this is the out from the dilemma in the first sentence. Because if you're screwed when you drink, you're screwed when you don't drink. That's a dilemma. There's no way out of that. But there is. So if we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves. So we want you to make that jump, make that spiritual jump. We're saying like, you know, you're flying a helicopter that you made it, and it's all fucked up. It's, the reason it's all fucked up is because you made it. And it's going to crash. So what we're asking you is to jump out of the fucking helicopter. You have a parachute, it's called 12 steps. It'll open. So don't stay with it don't stay with your life the way it is now. Do what we tell you, do what we suggest that you do. So anyway, that was a way out of it for me, is when I saw that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And I always believed in some kind of a deity, some kind of a god, something. Religion was a different matter. And I was interested in all religions and so forth, but I wasn't, I didn't have an idea that I never had a relationship with a god. I had a relationship with dogma, with beliefs, with this and that, but never a personal relationship with something that was greater than I was. So I was screwed. That was like the last house on Elm Street from here. There's nowhere else to go. So I said, I'll do it. I don't really believe in it, but I'm going to do it anyway. And that became my motto. When someone suggested do something that was maybe a little bit odious to me, I said, well, I'll do it anyway. I don't believe it, but I'm going to do it anyway. So that's what I did. So I made this decision to turn my life and will over to the care of God. Then I had trouble with that because I said, how the hell can you turn your will over? Because if I get up in the morning, I say my prayers, ask God to help me, stay away from a drink of alcohol today, or remove desire for a drink, and I say the other prayers that I say, and then I leave my house and I pull at the end of my street and somebody pulls right out in front of me, I'm going to start screaming and yelling. In those days, I would start screaming and yelling and be all upset about it because I took my will back. I said, so I'm going to take it back, and then I'll give it and take it back. So I was uncomfortable with that. So I was reading the Oxford literature, which is the precursor to this program, which they were a very religious group, and they had these moral principles, and it was like honesty, understanding, love, and purity. And from that, the guys that wrote this book did 6 steps, and then they fine-tuned it for drunks and made it into 12 steps so that it was unique for drunks because it was written by drunks, which is, we're very effective in dealing with each other, with drunks. We're very effective in helping people if we do what we're supposed to do. Who do you think is going to help a drunk better than a guy that's been through this program, has done all the steps, has the sponsor, helps other people? Who do you think is going to guide that man better? A priest, a rabbi, an imam, a medical doctor? Any other kind of doctor or expert, a drying out place? Reading books by people who have PhDs on this, on alcoholism. You think they could help a guy with a PhD? You think he could help you better than a drunk from here who is sober? Because he has the advantage of saying, here's what I did. Instead of saying, well, this is what I think, this is my interpretation, this is my analysis, this is my judgment, this is the way I think should be done. No, it's, here's what I did. In other words, I do it at all. Moreover, there's a kind of humility in that. You know, there used to be a friend of AA in the early days. He was a psychiatrist. He wasn't an alcoholic. Maurice Jelinek. He said, the pendulum of the alcoholic is always swinging between two things, annihilation and grandiosity. I was exactly that way. If I couldn't be sober or anything, I wanted to be drunk, but I wanted to be the best fucking drunk that ever lived. I'd be the wildest, craziest drunk that ever lived. Or if a guy wants to be a bum, he wants to, if he's not, can't be God, hero, Superman, movie star, novelist, this or that, president of the world, he'll go the other way, toward annihilation. But he'd be the best asshole that ever lived because it satisfies him in some way that he's the best. So anyway, it's little by little I start to realize this is what this is about. And then I started working with other people and so forth. So it gave me a lot of ideas. I had never read the big book. I had gone only to meetings like in a social way, or to look up dresses and down blouses. go to those kind of meetings. You know, thank God I never got into the AA marriage. Well, she's an alky and you're an alky, and the wild, wild, crazy romance and this and that, and then you have an AA marriage. Lovely. Anyway. What else did I want? Oh, so anyway, one of the, I'm going to close with this. There was a guy named William James who wrote The Varieties of Religious Experience. And he was a very famous psychiatrist, psychologist. As a matter of fact, he held the chair at Harvard for 35 years. He wrote 35 books. He gave a series of lectures called The Gifford Lectures in Scotland. And they made it into this book, The Varieties of Religious Experience. And a lot of AA ideas and principles and things like that were predicated on some of his thoughts. He believed that there was a divine even biological, a divine piece of God in us. It's like Carl Jung, the psychiatrist, said one time on his, it was written on his tombstone, Vocatus aquae non vocatus Deus adirit. Bidden or not bidden, God is present. You can either bid God, or you can forget about it. You can ignore him. It's up to you. You know, you pick one. And it's an important choice to make. So, William James believed there's like a spark of divinity in us that gives us intuition, that gives us a moral sense and conscience and so forth. And that God is almost, a lot of people didn't like it, it's because it was pantheistic. In other words, the belief that God is in every single thing in the universe. Every single molecule, every single human being, inveterate within us, see? So he says in his closing that, in my closing, there's two kinds of people in the world. There's the sick-souled people and there's the healthy-souled people. He says that the healthy-souled people only have to be once born. They're average people, they're nice people, they don't seem to have the ups and downs that the crazy people have. They seem to be calm, they lose their families and go to funerals, they don't get crazy drunk, they raise children, they be responsible members of they're patriotic, they're this, that. So they live good lives, they have an idea about what the world is about, and they have faith and those kind of things. So we call those the healthy souls people. They don't exactly walk around like Mary Poppins, but they're healthy minded. And the sick, so he says, they just have to be born once. But the sick soul people, they have to be reborn. Which means that AA, if you do it right, they want you to die. Okay? We want you to die. We want you to die to your selfishness and your self-seeking and your dishonesty and your fear and the things that you hate and the anxiety and the dread and the pity and the conflict of life and the screaming and yelling and ranting and raving, the craziness and the harm that we cause. So they want you to die to that. So it's like everybody's got a bag of shit. And you have to carry it. And you have to carry it up a mountain. Let's call a mountain Calvary, okay? You'll understand a metaphor, I'm sure. I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about a metaphorical idea. So they want you to get nailed. They want you to get nailed to some kind of a cross. And they want you, it's also called the crucifixion of the ego. They want you to crucify your ego, to have some kind of humility, to get away from the pride and the grandiosity and those kind of things. And those are those bad things, those bad ideas that make us drink. So, and we all know that, we're all aware of death. I'm not too far away from it, to tell you the truth. But anyway, we're all aware of that. And that's one of the first difficult things to deal with in life is death. So, and we think we can fuck with it, you know, we can get around it somehow, we can do this, we can delay it and all this. So anyway, I'm going to close with a story that has something to do with that. It only takes maybe a minute to tell, or maybe 2 minutes. Takes place about 600 years ago in Iraq. No, in Baghdad, yeah. And so there's a servant. His name is Ahmad, and he works with this very wealthy man. And he sends him out to do an errand in the marketplace. So while he's shopping around the marketplace, out of the corner of his eye, he spies death. It scares the shit out of him. So he runs to a stable, and he steals a horse. And he races this horse up to a town called Samarra, which is 100 miles northeast of Baghdad. And when he's there, he feels he's safe and so forth, because he got away from death. And there's a flashback in the story to the marketplace again, and sickness is hanging around with death. And sickness says, "Hey, you know that that servant Ahmad for that rich guy?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "I saw him in the marketplace earlier." And death says, "You did? Well, that's very strange, because tonight I have an appointment with him in Samarra." Okay. Thank you.
Okay, listen up, guys. If you have completed a fifth step out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and have experience with the step being discussed tonight, we encourage you to share your experience with us.
Thanks, Mom.
If you have not, we ask that you